Welcome to CTV. It's our bi-weekly program we do this time of the year. Today we're going to be talking, the topic of the show is, so what kind of society are we anyway? So we call ourselves CTV, Society for Economic Equality. And we try to address a lot of issues, government, politics, people, babies, all that stuff. And I thought we'd do a retrospective this week of, you know, what kind of society do we have? How come we do have these problems? How do we treat our children, our criminals, our workers, our little girls? All these things reflect on what type of society we do live in. Joining me on the panel this evening is Josh Valer, first time on the panel. We're glad to have him with us.
Thanks.
And to my left here, Johnny Kay. He's been on several times, always a good person. And Rick Todd, a longtime member of CTV, who has also been on the panel many times.
Not for a while.
But not for a while. We wanted to talk about different aspects of society, the sociological effects of TV, the workforce, how do we treat our children. I believe Josh's idea was something about TV, cult TV, retro TV, how it's been affecting us. Would you like to go ahead and read your first one?
Yeah, I'm talking about cartoons and how cartoons can be a positive effect on society, because I was really inspired by cartoons like Bugs Bunny and violence and all that other kind of stuff, because it was really clever. And lots of people say that cartoons can be a negative thing because they're slowly getting more and more less intelligent. And if we look at graphic 2, this is an example of positive cartoons. It's more of showing what the American family is in kind of a sarcastic way. And I think that there's a possibility of TV being a good artistic medium, and if we can not just level it over with a whole bunch of crap. But I've got a quote from Ner Litner, if I have enough time. But
go ahead.
Okay. Ner Litner said about, from the Popular Arts of America, psychological impact of TV upon the viewer. How do you factor out the specific variable you're trying to measure? What is your definition of violence? How do you compare the unreality of the violence in many of the children's shows against the realistic portrayal of a savage beating? How does humor affect the impact? What if the violence is justified? Many prominent people believe that the violence shown on television has either an immediate or a potential harmful psychological effect on TV viewers. Ner Litner used this quote to demonstrate a typical view about the harmful effects of television and the mass media. There's a tendency to stereotype emotions at the expense of emotional spontaneity of the individual. The relentless commercialism and the surfeited brutality, violence and sadism has been a profound impression of susceptible young people. The result is a distortion of natural attitudes in the direction of cynicism, greed, hostility, callousness, and insensitivity. Litner challenges this line of thinking by listing his own views of television violence. He believes that the vast amount of violence on television is basically a reflection of the violent interests of the viewers. So the viewers have some sort of psychological why there's a lot of violence, he thinks, on television.
If society didn't want this, I wouldn't get the ratings and it wouldn't be on there.
Right. So it has something to do with the darkness that's in our souls, why television is so dark and violent.
Homer.
Yeah.
Homer was originally written as supposed to be an unlikable character by the creators of The Simpsons. And they were fascinated by how America just fell in love with him, because he's so self-centered and so he in He's a part of us that we're all afraid to look at. The seven deadly sins, his greed, his gluttony, his sloth. He embraces it so fully that we all understand that part of us. The truth is through Messiah.
Even
we see the truth through Homer. Homer will set us free.
Even though, you know, a lot of people bulldoze it over and they're just like, oh, it's just a cartoon. There's a psychological reason why Matt Groening came out with that cartoon. He was trying to make us look at, you know, how, I don't know, kind of fucked up our lives are.
Can't say that.
I'm sorry.
I think they sort of stumbled onto it.
Yeah.
I don't think that they were actually looking for that at first, but sort of stumbled on it, and people just, you know, it's a sensation. And so Simpson says a lot about our society. It's on a couple times a day, every day. With the King of the Hill, which is also messed up. Every character on there, you just almost loathe every character. My favorite one is Bobby, and he's still creepy and weird. You have anything to say about that, John?
The subject of cartoons, we could do a whole show on. I'm totally fascinated with them. A couple things I'd point out. Some of the early cartoons that were quite violent, Tom and Jerry's, and some of the Bugs Bunnies and the Popeyes, weren't really done for television. They were done for movie theaters, a different audience. And then there's a dynamic that's going on when it comes to television of wanting to run everything through a blenderizer so that it's inoffensive, and that strips out a lot of the violence
and
intelligence and anything that could be edgy. But there's also the need for the show to heighten our physical responses, our gut responses, in order to prepare us for the advertising, which is soon to follow. This is a psychology of television production of news, for instance, which is very heavily advertising. You get people fearful or agitated or worked up, and then you show them the relief in the commercial, which will smooth over the terrible emotions which you drummed up through the violence. And so there's a tension between not wanting to offend people and yet wanting to get them on the edge of their seat.
Worked up enough so that you'll get a reaction out of
them. And so they're taking advantage of the natural innate need to learn about violence because it's the reality of life on this planet. And so there's a fascination with the violence because it has to do with survival instincts. Mm-hmm. So they take advantage of people's survival instincts through these, the simulated violence, which, and then depending on how it's presented, it either...
there's clever violence in this.
Well, there's ways of coming to deeper meanings. You know, watching All Quiet on the Western Front is much different than watching something like, a shoot 'em up kind of Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of violence for violence' sake.
But don't you think the last few generations have been really shielded from violence? It's a violent planet we live on. Violence used to be a big part of people died a lot from different things. Things were, being held up with the measles and swelling up and sweating for a few days didn't seem to be violent, but that would be a pretty violent death for you. People died and trampled by horses. People weren't fixed so easily. People killed their own animals and stuff. You saw violence on a regular basis. It was more a part of you hunted. It was a part of your daily existence.
Well, it depends on how you're defining violence. Seems like your definition is pretty wide. I would say that violence has been prevalent throughout human history, and it's no different now than it was at any time. There's pockets of
we don't
humanity
see it,
that develop. Well, sure we do. I've
not on an everyday, back to caveman buddies. They had
a recent crime statistic just came out, and what they touted was that overall crime is down. Whoop-dee. And rapes up, murders up, and property crimes are down. And so, in other words, the rich are better at protecting their wealth. There's less wealth among the poor for them to steal from each other. And there's more violence usually perpetuated on lower-class persons. And which at this point could be considered the majority of the American people are.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
So that might just be a stereotype, though, more on the lesser, you know, like you think it's just on them that the violence happens, or is that how it's portrayed in television?
Well, I would say that statistics bear out that victims of murder are more likely to be lower income, living in neighborhoods where murders tend to happen. Hmm. You know, if you live in a gated community and
You're hiding
your office building has a security guard.
What kind of violence is going on behind those doors, and how well do they hide that, and how much is mama?
Oh, not to say that there's not spousal abuse and that sort of thing among more upper class people, but
and violence is a way to express yourself.
It is.
Society expresses itself.
Well, it's a dysfunctional way
of punk
expressing yourself when you feel that your creative outlets.
Please don't use that word.
Well, okay, whatever word you want to say, but it's the the negative expression of what is normally expressed through creativity. And in a society like ours, where creativity is suppressed and punished, you're bound to have more expressions
Of negative
of violence.
Negative
violence. Another aspect of violence, too, among poor people in our society is lead paint deterioration in older homes in inner city neighborhoods. One of the first symptoms of lead poisoning is aggression. So
throw a little fetal alcohol syndrome, man.
I don't know if this connects with what you're saying, but I know Detroit has a big problem with lead paint. And I just heard a statistic to throw out there that the death toll, cumulative death toll, murder toll in Detroit over the last 30 years is 17,000. And that's more than in what are reported as war zones, like Northern Ireland, which has supposedly been going through the troubles for the past 30 years. There's more people just in Detroit who have murdered each other than in this war zone in Northern Ireland. No, not a year. Over the 30-year period, that's a lot of murders. 17,000 is a lot of murders just for one city.
So, what do you? And do you have any ideas of where this, why this violence happens?
Well, the lead paint may have something to do with it. I think it
it's a
more.
It's a lot of foundries on there, heavy metals on the water table. Who knows?
I think
but
a lot of it
John,
has to do with desperation. I think a normal reaction of any human being to facing trying circumstances, desperate circumstances, is to lash out, to break out of the box that you find yourself in, and mm-hmm. that is violence. It's it's unthought through. It's not always, you know, they're not committing this violence with a rational plan in mind that
like
they will end up in
rat.
A they're just like saying, what do? I eat my own tail or eat their tail, and they eat their tail.
But of course, you know? the effective response and the alternative response from violence is creativity. So if you respond creatively to the negative situation
that's very true.
Violence never solves anything. No, violence solves it solves lots of things. But it never gets you any further.
Right.
It's the same thing. You're never moving on to the next level if you choose to use violence as the answer.
It's almost like an artificial way of solving things.
Gets it taken care of.
Yeah.
Well,
it's part of evolution.
If somebody has a hammer, they start to see everything as a nail. And you have the nail.
Yeah.
Props.
And unfortunately, the hammer of violence is applied almost inevitably, most times inappropriately. I would say that certainly if someone is attacking you or those around you, a defensive violent response may be appropriate, but we have a society that is violent towards all of us basically all the time. I think kids experience
tons of violence.
Tons of violence, but also just sort of the mood. I would say that traffic seems violent. That the level of noise and aggression represented by all these
noise
cars.
Pollution.
Well, the noise and the danger represented by the.
Well, it just changes things anyway. All right, enough about violence. John,
Well, to keep going and at, with the question what kind of society we are,
yes.
And it kind of segues from violence. Another maybe a root cause of violence is the competitiveness which our society, especially American society, but a lot of the Western societies, breed in us. I mean, we value competitiveness to come out on top, and we support a dynamic which encourages us to treat each other as if we're objects to extract value from. You know, there's the common thing of let the buyer beware. So that sets up a dissonance, a moral dissonance in people, in that they're expected to behave incredibly selfishly and competitively, but only up to a point, and that point is defined by this abstract law. Screw each other over only up until a point, and then you can't go any further, and that causes a lot of problems, and a lot of people fly over that line over
and
into
we
what we call violence.
Our life satisfaction from togetherness. From
do you think that has something to do with buying stuff and money and the whole commercialism thing, that we get kind of drains and drips down on us and goes into relationships?
Well, the whole market is of buying and selling is a competitive dynamic. There is no forethought put into what sort of products are going to be provided by society and or how they're going to be distributed. What products are produced and how they're distributed is determined through a competitive dynamic of buyers and sellers at each other's throats. You know, I'm trying to sell you the least amount of weed, and you're trying to get the most amount of weed. I mean, even on the black market, it's like that, and that's all the way to the top of the pyramid. The oil.
Can you get weed not on the black market?
Well, the black weed of oil, it's the same thing, you know. The gas stations across the street are off by a penny or tenths of a cent sometimes, you know.
Right,
and that's the competitive
dynamic.
This
derives from an ideology that's derived from earlier understandings of evolution, where the focus of the study was on competition, survival of the fittest, as it were, whereas presently understandings derived from ecology and newer thoughts about evolution suggest quite strongly that cooperation is the basic modus operandi on the planet, what with the Gaia theory, for instance.
But do you think that will work now? Do you think people are able to cooperate right now? It seems like people have a huge problem with cooperating outside of the people.
Well, it has to work or we perish.
Right.
Or you perish and somebody who wants to kill you and live doesn't.
Right.
A society
that behaves in this way loses its cohesion and is ultimately self-destructive. And so we see it in our modes of production, which aren't ecologically sustainable. So even to the degree that one guy wins the day for his life, for the length of his life, eventually our grandchildren or great-grandchildren are going to have to pay the consequences for all this lack of cooperation. And
not if he kills you and all your grandchildren.
No, his grandchildren. Ultimately, the whoever is the survivor, if they continue to behave in a way that isn't sustainable, squandering social capital, ecological capital, ethical capital, to the point where society collapses, the ecosystem collapses, there's no escaping from the bad karma of treating people badly.
Mm-hmm.
Treating people nicely is the new thing. Jesus started that whole thing, right? I think that's the big last jump.
It's an old thing, actually. Old thing.
But it's the newest jump in evolutionary, jump in the mind, the way we think. You know, loving your brother, loving your neighbor.
Well,
just a recognition of power.
I would dispute that.
Well, dispute it all you want. I'm the moderator.
I mean, that's a good point, though.
I don't think we've made any more jumps since then. Maybe we've let women in, and they're getting better at math. But the last real big thing that
the mind did was started to treat people decently. To treat the common man as decently as you would treat somebody else. Treat your neighbors well, not want to steal, rob from them.
Well,
forgiving each other, accepting each other.
I would
say
that the difference would be that it was extended beyond the tribe, that prior to a new ethic of love everybody, there's the natural love of the member for the rest of the tribe, mm-hmm. because that's their survival base, and they recognize that. We, through engaging in these ideologies, have come to believe that we're not embedded in the tribe, that our 401k, our personal financial security is real security. And we've failed to forget that the only real security is with your neighbors, with your community. You know, when you have employment, for instance, that's based in small businesses that are rooted in the community, it doesn't just disappear. But when the employment base has no loyalty to the community, it can be shipped to China, and often is.
I think something with the isolation creates, the whole Marxist isolation has created kind of a caring only about yourself, and big, you know, and that kind of isolates us from caring about other people, you know, because we were all in our little boxes, you know, typing away at computers. And
the market's isolation?
The Marxist, you know, isolation idea, you know.
See, I would have...
Well, alienation.
Talking about the next big ideas, I would have said, since the biggest idea...
There's a graphic I have up here. It says, what I'm trying to say, Stevenson or whatever,
the point
that a younger man can jump higher. He's got the big fat cat behind the desk, and he's jumping, but...
Uh-huh.
Somebody can jump higher. You were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
You know, there's a line there somewhere where you're obsolete. And that's why you got to get yours while you can. I got to get mine. That's the kind of society we live in, really. I got to get mine. I want that big TV.
And it ultimately leaves us spiritually hungry, if not
spiritually
physically
empty,
hungry. Yeah, it's...
All right, we're going to open up the phones here. If you guys out there, or if anybody's watching... and have any questions or comments, they are quite welcome. The number, they have it on TV there, 459-4881. Any and all questions, comments are welcome. Now, didn't you have something that you were going to bring up?
Well, I had been thinking about a few different things, and I guess
like
maybe my...
Dominating the conversation.
I might... One of the main things that I think about is how schools treat children. And,
good point. I wanted to bring
that
up.
I think that's a real prime example
how
we're creating the next generation of servile.
Exactly. That's why they don't want to put any money into the schools. We talk about this over and over. It drives me nuts.
Yeah.
And this is a reflection of our society. We can spend millions. We can spend $400 billion a year on this war on drugs, but we can't get our kids some books.
Right.
Or some ventilation.
Well, even beyond those issues, there's the issue of the school system itself is designed for cultural homogenization and not for getting the best out of each individual.
Looks like we got a caller.
We have a caller, line one there, Rick. Rick, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good evening, gentlemen. Dennis, this is the Rick that you called on the phone, and I only heard your number once, so I couldn't remember and couldn't call you back.
Well, we filled the panel without you.
I can see that. It's a very good panel.
Another time.
It's a very good panel. I agree with what you said there, Dennis, about the last good idea, and of course, 2,000 years ago.
Thank you.
Some people disagree with that, but the problem is that the standard, I think Rick would agree with this too, the standard of Christianity, I believe, is the highest ideal of any religion or any political philosophy. And that being the case, it's so hard to live up to.
Hello?
Well, we lost Rick.
I just want to, can I jump in?
Wait a second. It is kind of hard to live up to. You know, ideology or fundamentalism.
Calling us back.
I'm sorry.
Fundamentalism has really, I think, destroyed the whole idea of Christianity, what the
That's
whole thing was
sure.
to begin with and what it was about.
Well, it seems to me that fundamentalism is a symptom of any sort of school of thought. It can occur to religion. It can occur to irreligion.
It's in the way with everything.
You know, what is communism, but fundamentalist socialism? What's you know.
It's me, right? Me, me, me. It's my idea. Just like me, I don't think there should be any death penalty. Only person I think that should decide whether somebody should die or not is me. How could we leave it in the hands of society?
Well, every religion.
No, he's got to go. He's real bad. No, that one go.
Every religion seems
Rick's to Rick's back on the line. We lost you there, Rick.
Yeah, I guess I was cut off by Buddha. But anyway, yeah, well, I'm just going to listen now, but I just wanted to reiterate that I think that so many, it is unfortunate that so many people on the left take this atheistic perspective, and it's usually Marxist, you know, and they don't seem to realize that there is a great tradition of Christian socialism. I don't really think it was the atheists that built hospitals. I don't think it was the atheists that were involved in the abolitionist movement. And Dennis, once again, you hit it right on the head. Fundamentalism, especially in this area, the Calvinist tradition of Christianity, has so perverted Christianity.
It's tough here, isn't it?
That it's an easy target to say, well, you Christians aren't any good. I mean, you just think God takes care of, you know. You know the whole ethos of Calvinism.
Yeah, well, it seems like you've hit on the one of the core of our society's problem, Calvinism, and its justification for usury to the point where now with money printed by fiat in response to debt, we have a whole economic system based upon usury. So that's a prime example where, you know, we can talk about the difficulty of living a religious life as an individual, but as a society, you would think that we would at least take what the prophets seem to have been loudest about, seriously. Doing justice to the poor, what they've been loudest about.
Yeah. Josh?
Well, I don't know if it really has that much to do with religion. I mean, why we make hospitals and stuff like that, but...
St. Mary's? All these
traditionally,
all these hospitals were built. You know, those friars went around and built all those...
But I wonder if we'd still have compassion without religion.
Well, I would say that you would, once you had compassion, you would then end up with religion. So even if the religion disappeared and the compassion stayed, you'd just end up with it again. So.
And it actually kind of all is sort of like spiritual.
And maybe that's the most important
religion
thing.
Religion is a sort of a dirty word almost.
Maybe you don't really have, any kind of spiritual life unless if you have compassion. I mean, that's the key to, do we have a compassionate society? It doesn't seem
Well,
like.
You know, Jesus talked about forgiving people. You don't, if you can't forgive people, you're going to carry that hate around. That never feels good inside. You have to, you know, that's a step right there in feeling about things when you don't. We have a new caller on the line. L.A. Dave. He's been calling in lately. Can you hear me, Dave?
Yes.
What do you got to say?
Well, this is L.A. Dave, and I'm a real big fan of your show. I'd like to just tell you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I was hoping you guys could maybe give some concrete examples on how we can work together at the grassroots level to maybe make some changes in the way things are being done with regard to the local economy. And... that's really what I'm looking for, some good examples, some specific...
Local economy?
Yeah, I think Mr. Todd might have a few words on how...
I'm sure he does.
...we can work together.
Well, a good example of improving local economy and making that work for the people who live here and something that can't be exported out of here is local currencies, like they have in Ithaca, New York, and other places. Grand Rapids...
Local bakeries, breweries... Never forget your local brewery. Get the apples. Buy whatever you can locally. It's the best thing you can do. Best thing you can do for your neighbor is to help them out, you know. Mm-hmm. Trade them a pig for a sheep or whatever.
It's better to involve people that you can, I don't know, like you can kind of feel with.
You know, they say the higher standards of living are going to be in your rural areas where you're going to have smaller micro communities where... the food's going to be better and stuff because it's closer by and stuff. And it's not going to be any more expensive than if you lived in the city. It's going to be more expensive to live in the larger cities where everything's being bussed in from. You can get asparagus year-round now. They're growing in Argentina. That's great, but what does that do for our local economy?
Well, also, what does it do to the environment to have all those...
All those microbes flying all over the world?
Well, yeah, there's Well, there's the importation of...
Make you strong.
Of,
kill the weak.
Through increased trade, the importation of, invasive species. There's the pollution created by the trade.
There's, Dave, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
There's one thing I think it's important to point out, is that just because you're dealing with somebody locally doesn't mean that he's any less a bastard than someone thousands of miles away.
That's very true.
To me, and I've given it some thought, the dynamic that has to be changed is going back to that competitiveness. It's easier to do this locally, that's for sure, but to devise a system, to participate in a system which doesn't call on your most base instincts, if that's possible to do, it would be the goal. And whether that's done locally or internationally becomes almost beside the point.
I don't think that higher echelons of organization can be kept from being corrupt. I think that, and ultimately, you have to live in a neighborhood. You actually have to live and work
place.
And so the virtual idea is
you have
about,
to keep it underground.
That you have to live where you live and participate fully in the life of that place, and not have your economic life based on 12-year-old girls in Indonesia making your sweaters.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Walmart, get a sweatshirt for.
I don't think that's an impossibility.
They make really nice soft shoe leather down there.
What you're saying is not an impossibility for.
We have another caller.
You to interact with someone on the far side of the world in an equitable and cooperative manner is not impossible. It's easier.
As a matter of fact, and it's going to end up being like that globalization thing we're always worried about and stuff like that. Basically, this is just it. We're going to have to learn how to make everybody happier and stuff, or we're going to lose our standard of living, and people's standard of livings are going to have to come up, or they're just going to hate us because we're Americans and we're
The constant warfare will do us in.
We have another caller. We have a caller on the line. Steve. Steve, can you hear me? Are you there, Steve?
Well.
No, Steve's not there.
Yeah, I think we should care more about our kids, because it seems like we're not doing that much.
It used to be Mom was staying home with them. But now we're a two-family workforce. A two-person workforce for the family. Both people have to work. And there's not anybody there to watch the kids. The TV's there watching the kids. The TV's there teaching your kid. The TV's the third parent.
And when you take that away, they freak out, because that's all they know. Beyond the TV.
And the school is just kind of like a home or a child care system, too.
And people expect them to teach them things like manners and etiquette and stuff at school. What's Steve appropriate, what's not appropriate. I guess Steve is back on the line. Steve, can you hear me? No, I guess he's not. I hear a beeping noise.
Yeah.
Let's talk about children a little more. Animals, and there's more money spent on people's pets, I think, than there are spent on school books in this country. I mean, animals have more rights than a lot of the children.
Well, I think...
I mean, they really
that's
do.
True.
I don't know. You
that's
get in
true.
A lot more trouble for
I don't
doing
know
something
the
to a puppy.
Should be the
I'm
focus.
Talking. You do a lot more things in trouble for doing the same thing to a puppy as you would to a kid.
Not even
called. Okay, it looks like we might have Steve on the line again. Steve, can you hear me?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
He's a charm.
Good. Hey, good. You guys are going to so many topics. Real quickly, isn't it NAFTA? Is that what is actually driving a lot of these jobs into Mexico and into Canada, or is that also a cause of it going to Asia and that type of thing, in your guys' opinion?
That's the NAFTA's North American Free Trade Agreement.
Right.
Yeah, NAFTA is part of the overall pushed by transnationals towards global control of the economy through their auspices.
I don't necessarily think that you guys were also kind of mentioning jobs going overseas to the sweatshops. I don't believe that's a problem, because actually when I saw an interview with a woman that supposedly worked at a sweatshop, and she was complaining how that's actually the sweatshop paid them more than they would anywhere else.
They get to eat. They might not even get their bowl of rice if they didn't have that sweatshop to work in. And we're standing over here. People can sit over here with their cell phones in there, whatever, and say, oh, that's terrible, that's terrible. They got children working over there. But you know what? These children are running around with no food, on the other hand.
Right,
what are you going to do? Just send them food? Or are you going to teach them how to do something, put a business in there? Maybe it's not up to our standards, but they're glad to have those jobs. They're glad to have those jobs. And who are we here with our whatever to tell them they don't need
them? You're looking at a very narrow time frame when you say that. And reports from people who work in those jobs and are glad to have them are people who lived in a social context in which traditional means of livelihood had been removed through economic forces controlled by transnational corporations. So you have situations...
But that's not going to stop, though.
It's not going to stop.
Okay, and if it doesn't stop, then we'll continue to deplete the environment, squander cultural social resources, and we'll have catastrophic collapse. Either we treat people justly and we allow them to
have...
What
did Steve say?
We need our Nike shoes and our P. Diddy clothes.
We need shoes. We don't need Nike shoes.
I know. It's corporate welfare sponsorship is ridiculous, but I don't think it's going to change.
Well, it's up to us if it's going to change.
Well,
it's not a force of gravity.
No, I'll tell you what, everything's going to change.
Yeah, everything changes.
The brainwashing's already done by Rush
but we
Limbaugh,
can't get out of that Rush brainwashing? Limbaugh, there's no way to back out of that? Or
pardon me?
Is there no way to get out of that brainwashing?
I think too much of America, actually, I would say a good 50% of Americans are dumb. They're not going to be educated enough to...
The real issue here
is there a way to educate them, though, and get them above that?
It's sad. We're
trying right here.
You can try right here, exactly. But I don't see it changing. All right, fellas, have a good night.
Thank you very much, Steve. Yeah.
Either we turn towards a sustainable, equitable, fulfilling lifestyle and livelihood, create a society that's good for children and other people, or we'll reap the consequences of the perpetuation and the expansion of this system, and it will bring about its own collapse.
Well,
and then the survivors of this massive die-off will turn towards loving
one
another and living in community.
Now. We have a new caller on the phone. It's Matt. Can you hear us, Matt?
Yeah.
What do you have to say, Matt?
Well, I guess my question would be, you're kind of talking about the bioregional self-sufficiency stuff and pretty large global type things. I guess those are worthwhile things to talk about, but how about things more local, things that individuals can actually have an impact on as far as how we treat the less fortunate or disadvantaged people right here in our own community?
Well, you can always go do some volunteer work. They need people to serve down at the soup kitchens. They need people to sort out at the gleaners. They need people to be big brothers and mentors, and churches always got something going on. You know, the Republicans give the churches all that money, and everybody was all up in arms about that and stuff. But, you know, those are the programs that are there. And, you know, by no means am I a big religious freak, but those programs, they're the ones that are always doing stuff. They did build the hospitals and the
and
right, all
Inner
kinds
City
of things.
Christian
yeah.
Federation and Habitat for Humanity.
And there's, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. Educate yourself, first of all, and make up your own mind.
Well, I mean, I understand the volunteer aspects, but I'm saying we're talking about kind of injustice and things in other countries. What do you see as the injustice right here in our own city?
Well, television is one thing. I mean,
no, he's talking about right here in our city. What's going on? Our city, you know what? Our schools are worse than Detroit's. Our schools are in line with, like, Flint's here in Grand Rapids. And that is an atrocity, because this is a very, very rich area. I mean, there are more self-made millionaires in West Michigan than, like, anywhere in the world. We have one of the highest overall real estate values in the world, too. And they keep shutting down all these schools. And you know what? They saved that one over on Lookout Hill. All the neighborhood got together, and they rallied, and they saved that school, and they built onto it. And then they got a park over there, and it's turned into a pretty nice neighborhood over there. And you know what? That's people just going down to the town meetings. Go down to the town meeting and run your mouth. And run your mouths at the bars and stuff, too. People that say, you know, never politics or religion or whatever up at bars and stuff. But
hello?
I think, hello?
Who's on the phone? Someone better hang up the phone.
What?
All right, we'll hang it up.
Thanks for your call, Matt.
Matt got in trouble.
Matt's in trouble. Well, to go back to what I was saying before, I'm just going to be a broken record here and say, and continue to look at radical, which means get down to the root. And the last time I checked, all of West Michigan economics was run on a market system. And the market itself is unfair, competitive, destructive to human spirit. And unless we are able to move beyond that as a source, no matter what we build on top of it, local, unlocal, religious, local. Not religious. If they work through the market, they're going to end up being
the local society. We got most of them working here.
They're going to end up being unfair and destructive. So.
Well, yeah, sure.
I don't know about if it's a market economy or capitalism.
Money,
and I think
capitalism.
There's a distinction. I think it's possible to have a Jeffersonian democracy where wealth is broadly distributed. A nation of.
We have another caller on the line, Nico. Nico, can you hear me?
How are you?
Hi.
Well, my question is what do you see as far as the forecast for the economy, not only for Western Michigan, but also for the nation, not only now, but for the future to come, not only with this president, but what's going to be the objective of the next president's going to do to turn around the economy, seeing that our last president, who was a crook, kind of put us in the position we're at now?
Our last one? Or you mean this one?
No, our last one. That would be President...
one's a crook too, right?
Clinton.
And the one before that.
Yeah, they're all crooks.
They're all crooks.
I would say that...
I think we're screwed, as a matter of... I think we're screwed.
Yeah.
Because I think it's only going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
We got this globalization thing like happening, like we said. The rest of the world wants TVs and VCRs, too.
I think we should look at ourselves as part of the government, though. I mean, we're an important part. I mean, looking
at
ourselves...
Well, not really.
The Republicans are cutting and running right now because... It's going to get bad, and we're going to be screwed.
Well, here's my thought on things, by golly, is that here we go to war with Iraq, and here we're sinking thousands of monies to blow the country up, and then we're putting millions and billions of money to rebuild it, while here in America, we've got more problems to deal with than what we do in Iraq.
Well, that's what we like to do. We like to go beyond ourselves and fight other people and not care about us, you know.
Right.
Well, it's a classic mistake of empire.
Well, they want to get that. I think they're afraid if they don't get there. Here's a good cartoon right up here.
Right.
Could you put that graphic back up there? Read that graphic for me.
And remember, make it look like an accident.
Well, just, you know, no, it's no different than, you know, when we went to war with Mogadishu with Bill Clinton. You know, that was a big mistake as well.
Yeah, I would say that all this military adventurism is a big...
Well, let's not forget that America is the number one arms dealer in the world. We sell more arms to everybody in the freaking world. I see a picture of a little girl holding a nice little automatic weapon tonight.
Right.
And we supported and armed Saddam Hussein, and then...
And here they use them against us.
We like distraction. That's what we like.
Not right. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Anika.
Have a goodie.
And I guess we have another caller, too.
Pouring in tonight. Excellent.
New caller, his name is Alan. Are you there, Alan?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, and?
I don't know. It's insane. I don't know what this last caller is talking about.
Could you speak up, please? I have trouble hearing you.
Bush is much worse than Clinton ever was. And it's just, you're right.
I agree.
Republicans and Democrats are both screwed.
They are.
The way it's set up now, they're both sell-out to their corporate interests. I figure the Republicans go way too far to the right. And the Democrats, I think, go way too far to the left. And other people disagree. They think we should be a socialist country, but I don't think we could support that.
See, I agree with you, too. I agree. I think that it's more of a class thing that we got going here. And Republicans and Democrats want to make you think it's liberal or conservative. Like, you are either this way or you are this way.
How did liberal turn into a bad word? I think all the Republicans out there should look at
it. It is a bad word now.
It's a swear word. It's because of Rush Limbaugh and his boys.
Oh, those guys...
Well, I don't like liberal or conservatives.
Well, the only thing
I don't either. I like to make it my own mind. You know, there's a whole gray area in there where I think people come to... we have people call into the show who are pretty right-wing, and most of the people on this show are pretty liberal, as you can tell by looking at the
liberals,
game.
You liberals.
But they fall on the same lines, a lot of blah, blah, blah things about the Constitution, about how they'd like to
too much government about how people need more voice. You know, there's a lot of important things where both sides, cause, you know, because the extreme rights end up flopping back in on each other.
So what,
with
so
the extreme
what do we do?
Left.
We just go to rage,
the same.
What do we do? We go to Rage Against the Machines and say,
I love
fight,
it.
Fight the power. Fight the power.
And okay, and so then
thanks,
the question
Alan.
Is, how do you fight the power? And I think the only way to do that is to love one another. Is that is
love.
The struggle?
Cameraman,
the struggle
number one cameraman
be,
over here, Blue, really wanted to bring up love again. And love
well,
is very important.
It's the soul force power that was used by Martin Luther King and Gandhi before him.
It's
the only
what makes
real,
things happen.
It's
yeah.
what really makes things happen and makes real change in society.
Well, Jesus started, I talked about it earlier. Well, I don't know if he started, but he made it real popular, you know. Somebody might have did some stuff in a garage and stuff, but he picked up the new sound and took it on tour. And we'll never forget him for that.
Yeah. Good old Jesus.
Good old Jesus. And L.A. Dave is called in again. Can you hear me, Dave?
Yeah, I'm live here in L.A. In Grand Rapids. I was wondering if you guys could comment on how we can get out of this two-party political system that we've got, that we're stuck in right now. It's just a huge waste of dollars, the campaigning and the elections. I mean, I'm not looking forward to the election year. What about you guys?
Well, the answer to that probably is people to vote their conscience. I think most people vote while holding their nose, and they vote for the lesser of two evils.
Well,
if people stop voting for an evil, the two-party system would disappear because everybody would vote for the party that they really cared about. Fundamentalists wouldn't vote for Republicans because they'd recognize how wicked they are, and they would vote for the Taxpayers Party, for instance, which is a religious-based party. And you would have a myriad of parties.
Unfortunately, though, with our two-party system, anytime there's a third party that makes any sense to anybody, Buchanan raped the Reform Party. He went in there and took them out for the Republicans, because they would have taken votes from the Democrats. So anytime there's a third party coming in, Green Party's going to take votes away from the Democrats. The Reform Party would have taken votes away from Republicans.
Third party always gets crushed, pretty much.
Not only do they get crushed, if you vote for the third party, the party if you'd want to vote for, you'd feel bad because...
But if everybody did
you
that,
want
the two-party system would disappear.
The Republicans in.
If people really voted their conscience...
If everybody did, but it doesn't...
And they didn't do this Machiavellian calculation.
I always vote for a third party.
Mm-hmm. Well, the winner-take-all system in this country, you know, if you start out with 100 parties, start over with 100 parties, you'd still end up with just two parties because they have a winner-take-all system, and that's the dynamic of the competitive thing. Again, it's the same thing with the market. When you put people in competition with each other, they winnow each other out until you only have, I think, Mark Zapatowski said the Highlander thing, there will be only one, you know, there can only be one winner at the end of it, and that's the whole, our whole society is based on that, of competition, and it gets
Matthew
down to
just,
those.
Matthew just wrote something that says, vote for yourself.
Yeah, but to get L.A. Dave, another tactic that you can use, rather than voting, or in addition to voting, or to get things going, is to actually do things, you know, and let that determine how you're going to vote. Instead of the speeches they make, you end up voting for the people who you're actually working with, or who actually did something for you because you were working next to them. I think that's, at least on the local level, that's a better way to do it than to just look at yard signs and advertisements and stuff.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah.
Always nice to hear from you. I think it's a damn joke. I think they never talk about the issues. They got things they throw up in front of us, and they tell us these are the issues, and then these are the other issues, abortion, gun control, drug laws, well, things like that. And this is all they ever talk about. And if it's popular, well, they bring it up. They do their polls now. You know, the Clintons were brilliant at it. Keep your mouth shut. You've been talking the whole time.
Yeah.
And they never really talk about real issues. They never get down to stuff that they're going to do. They might hint around that they might, Clinton, you have to go buff, yeah, maybe you guys, maybe I might legalize it. You know, he had us all, he rocked the vote, man. They took him in like crazy, and then you never heard another thing about it. Jesse Ventura said a similar thing just before he got voted governor of Minnesota.
So it's like they're always building us up to ecstasy.
Oh, they toy with you a little. They dangle a little bit in front of you, like, oh, why do this? Why do that?
Why won't they just let
us? Real issues cannot be solved because they're tools of social control.
How can they spend so much time trying to get their money to run for it? They don't have time to deal with any real issues. Because that's what it's about. Who can get out more TV time? Who can flood the media with more?
I don't think that it's so benign. I don't think it's benign neglect. I think it's intentional, ultimately, that the problems in society, the levels of violence,
the levels of violence
in our cities is a method of social control because it gives an excuse for the prison industrial complex, the problems with foreign nations that cause us to go to war is useful because it controls a population through the brainwashing that is patriotism. They can't solve the problems because the problems aren't a problem for the people who try to steer society towards their own ends of power.
Can I agree with you? Can I agree with you on that? And I think I am guilty of this. We're all guilty of it, of calling the situation stupid. You know, when we say, that just doesn't make sense. They're being so stupid. They're invading Iraq. Don't they know it's going to cause problems?
But it's way more complex.
They want it to cause problems. You know, that they have their own reasons. They don't have to be your reasons. They might not agree with you, but that doesn't make them stupid. You know, that might make them just that much smarter. You know, isn't school such a waste of time that the kids end up not being able to?
We're getting sucked down the time tunnel right now.
That kids going to school end up not knowing how to read and they all drop out or whatever. And isn't that so stupid and a tragedy? But actually, that's the plan. That's
right.
It's a rational plan. It just doesn't agree with our values. You know, so I think that's kind of what you were saying too.
You know. I got graphic number 8, Bobby, if you could throw it up. This is something I wanted to bring up. It says, are we addicted to drug war money? Well, government agencies, virtually every part of the federal government gets a piece of the $20 billion annual drug war budget. I don't know what all the government agencies need it for, but they do. And the prison industry is $50 billion annually, and 1/4 of the prisoners are drug offenders. You have the treatment industry. U.S. courts force more than 200,000 a year into drug treatment. 30% of all drug treatment admissions are mandated by the courts, and 57.1% of marijuana treatment admissions are court mandated. Then you have testing industry, $5.9 billion industry. It should be replaced with an impairment testing. Discovering marijuana use a week later is as irrelevant as finding that you drank beer a week ago. Profits are, and then you have pharmaceuticals, which profits are protected from medical marijuana competition. Alcohol companies, profits protected from social marijuana.
Got one more caller here.
Profits protected from social marijuana competition. And then banks. Banks process billions of drug money. When asked in a court how a major bank reacted in its arriving at the airport with $20 million in small bills, the courier responded, they sent a limousine. Military suppliers and contractors, helicopters, profit from $2 billion spent annually on foreign intervention in the name of the war on drugs. Drug trafficking represents 8% of the world's trade and untaxed and unregulated $4 billion annually. $400 billion annually.
Well, of course, they had to criminalize marijuana when they re-legalized alcohol because the government boys couldn't leave their buddies in organized crime without a profit source.
We all know about that. We have one more caller. We got about 5 minutes left. Carl, can you hear me? Are you there, Carl?
Carl, can you hear me?
Carl, can you hear me?
Hey, what's happening?
Hey, Carl.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Excellent. Hey, I was wondering if you could comment on the fine job that Wayne LaPierre, President of NRA, is doing, and lifelong member Charlton Heston and his contributions have been.
I love guns.
I do too. They're great.
But what do they say? An armed society is a polite society.
That's what they say.
Absolutely.
For my part, I've joined the NRA blacklist. They started blacklisting people, and I, along with a lot of other people, I think that the number of people who have requested to be blacklisted by the NRA is up into the 30,000 or something.
Oh, is that right?
And
I'm indifferent about it. My father-in-law always says it was a, when they wrote that, the right to bear arms, it was a right for the states to have militias, and they were thinking of a musket in every house, not an Uzi.
Right.
I still don't want society to be without guns in case the government tries to take over. I still want all my redneck friends to have guns just in case the Republicans decide they're going to.
Yeah, I don't know how relevant.
You see, I always say.
I don't know how relevant.
There he is. Look at him. Look at him go.
I don't know how relevant shotguns are to the
Joker.
The might of a modern army.
Shotguns are the best weapons. I got a shotgun.
But besides that point, the subject tonight was how we treat people, and so maybe we should look at, there's guns in society, and how are they handled, and issues concerning, like, for instance, I had to get on my mother's husband's case for not locking up his guns and locking up the ammunition. He left the shit laying out when my nieces and nephews were over, and so, you know, maybe responsible. Yeah, I guess NRA pushes for that, but there's a lot of gun violence in our society, and it doesn't seem to necessarily help.
Right.
But our faith in guns is not the thing. It's to put our faith in each other and to start acting like a society and not people.
But, all right. That's enough. Thank you very much.
Hey, hold on one second. I got one more comment.
All right, quick.
But you know, it's the darn gangbangers that give us hunters the bad rap, and son of a gun, it's a damn shame, because you know what? That ruins it for everybody.
And there was a law in the 80s that the Republicans passed in the middle of the night that made it so that anybody in the freaking ghetto, they flooded the ghettos with guns just like they flooded with heroin.
Yeah.
It was a damn conspiracy, I tell you. All of a sudden you could sell guns, and even if you were a felony, all you had to have was an address, and you didn't even need to live there.
Right.
And then you could resell them to anybody you want to in the hood, and they had all that crack money then.
You got that right, by
That's
golly.
What happened, man.
You bet. Absolutely.
And they did it on purpose.
Amen.
Thank you very much, Carl.
On purpose.
They did it on purpose.
Yeah. They do all that stuff.
So they could provide a strong police state for themselves and kill some people.
And make a lot of money, too.
Make a lot of money. We're going down 11-5. Hey, all right. I'd like to thank the crew tonight, Matt, Camera 3, Diane, our director out there, studio audience, Lou over here on Camera 1, Mr. Love.
And thanks to all the callers, too.
Thanks for all the callers. That was great, guys. I know, I was wondering what kind of show it's going to be. We had a lot of great callers tonight, believe me.